Welcome to the Main Street Minute with equestrian marketing expert India Wilkinson. This is the destination for all things equestrian, from horse sales, breeding, horse health, and a look into the intricacies of the horse business world. Join India as she dives in with industry leaders to discuss the challenging and rewarding lifestyle of being in the equestrian world. And get ready for the Main Street Minute.
Hi there, this is India Wilkinson with the Main Street Minute, and I am super excited to welcome Margaret McElvey with Mythic Landing Enterprises today. And I'll just share a little bit. Margaret and I met back in during COVID when we did a round table with Major League Eventing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
I got that right. And you were friends with them. And so I can't remember exactly how that happened, but you drew me in and then we connected and we're like, okay, we're going to be friends.
Yeah,
right?
Pretty much. That's how it works.
All right. So, and that was actually really fun. I got to meet a lot of great people with that round table. So I'll always appreciate that. So tell us about Mythic Landing Enterprises. Of course, you and I are friends, so I see you everywhere, but actually as not as your friend, I see Mythic Landing everywhere. I do, which you guys do such an incredible job. And of course, I am always honored that you have your clients on my website, Main Street Market. We work hard to market those horses. So thank you for choosing us.
Yeah.
All right. Tell us about MLE.
So my little elevator pitch for MLE, how I describe us is that we are a small business ourselves. Okay. Which I think matters. And we are full service marketing and business management. So that means that we can handle everything from your social media to the professional riders. We help them with their sponsorship program. But we also offer bookkeeping. We offer business planning. We, you know, do everything for your website, whether it's just create the website or do search engine optimization. My whole goal with the business from when I started it was to become a one-stop shop. Where riders could come, they can have one team of people that can handle all of these things. Because, you know, horse people are busy, right? They don't have time to be on the phone with six different people about six different things, but they do have time to be on the phone with one person about six different things, you know? And so then I, you know, whoever is, you know, talking to them, we take it and we just do everything with our team. So it's not just me. I can't do it all. So there's six of us and we all have our specialties, which I think, you know, it's pretty cool.
Well, I know what you do and I see such a benefit too. And I know we have a lot of riders in all kinds of different disciplines listening right now, professional riders, amateur riders. So, this is really geared toward that professional.
Yeah.
I think, you know, and you can speak more to this, but the professional riders business has changed so much in the last decade where they were expected to send out the invoices or just text and say, hey, you owe me this, bring me a check. And to now there needs to be someone doing the PR, running the sponsorships, handling invoices, like you said, all of those things, finding the PR opportunities, posting for them, all of those things that's what's changed so much. They really have to be in the limelight, you know,
yeah.
They're competing with other people. So kind of use an example of one of your pro riders and walk us through what you do for them.
One thing, we have one account that we've worked together for a really long time, Martin Duzant with the Frame Sport Horses. And what's been fun with working with him is that both of our businesses have kind of grown alongside each other. And, you know, so for him, he has a pretty big program that starts with breeding horses all the way up through FEI competition horses. And each of the programs that he has needs its own attention, right? So, you know, what we're doing for he always describes it as school. When you come to the frame, your horses are going to school and you start at pre-K all the way up to you know, graduate degrees. And so we have the challenge of illustrating for the public everything that they're doing, and not just the fun stuff, but also the hard work that goes into it. And so for him, you know, we do all of his social media, which is kind of fun because they do have baby horses. So Izzy, who does their media days, you know, as soon as the first baby hits the ground in the spring, she's like, I'm coming over. So all the way up to, you know, meeting him at competitions and kind of telling that story. And then beyond the socials, you know, you have all the marketing. My whole thing from the very beginning is it has to make sense, right? Everything has to make sense. What we're doing for any business needs to be putting money in your pocket, right? Like I don't want to say we're just as important as the hay bill, but you know, we are, if you want to run a successful business, we're one of the pieces to that puzzle. And so for him, we jump in and we do his entries, his horse show entries, you know, because that's something that saves him a lot of time. And then we also do his website as well. And on the flip side, we have some clients who all we do is their website. And that's mm-hmm. fine. Every mm-hmm. client that we have has a custom package. And for me, that was also very important because I never want people paying for services that they're not going to be using. So essentially, when you come to me, we have a literal menu of services and I'll talk to you, learn about your business, and the two of us will figure out what makes the most sense, how we can serve you best. Then we just put together a package. And so no one has the same type of business. No one has the same type of needs.
Well, and I think the biggest takeaway already is what I hear you saying is so that the horse professional in whatever capacity that is can actually do what they are designed to do. They have yes. that gift. They have that passion. I would say it's very unusual for someone who has that gift and that passion also has the gift for accounting and QuickBooks and all of those things. And, you know, I remember, I mean, this is way back in the day, but I remember like my trainer would take Monday supposedly off, but that would be the day she would spend all day doing her invoicing. And I was like, yes. That's not off.
That's and not a day off.
You're not right. And you're not, those are hours that could be billable. If you're going to work, you know, you should be making money. So it's really, that's what I think is so cool about this, that it alleviates that stress. They're hiring people to do it, like you and your team, to do what you do well. And then they literally are free from that. It's got to be an amazing feeling to be that trainer, to be able to focus on that and have that business side done. Because I know, you check in with them and all of those things. And also the marketing. I mean, I know because I market sales horses, it takes a lot of time to do it well. And then again, yeah. you're taking that pressure off of them.
Yeah, because they want to do what they signed up to do, which was not sit at a computer.
Right.
Right. And I remember there's this article that I have like a printout of it at my desk. And it's about this person who started her own business. She really wanted to open a yoga studio. She's like, no one told me that in order to run a yoga studio, I would be spending something like 70 to 80% of my time running the business and 20 to 30% of my time teaching yoga. And imagine if you said that to a professional rider.
Right.
If you said, guess what? You're going to be spending 5 days in the office and 2 days on the back of a horse. No one would do it. You know, that's not what they signed up to do. And so we're able to just kind of come in and fill in those gaps for them. And like you said, take something off their plate so that they can focus on the horses, because that's what they do well. And frankly, as a customer of them, that's what I want their focus to be on. If I'm sending my horse to you, and you know, it's everything's expensive these days, but sending a horse out for training is a big expense. And I want to know that your focus is on my horse and not on posting on Facebook because you need to, you know, fulfill whatever needs right. for your sponsors, you know, have someone else do that.
Right. That's their expertise. And this, I don't think when I was just thinking about this, when you're saying that, it's no different than having a farrier, a vet,
yes.
a barn manager, a groom, you know, a working student that's tacking the horses. So the trainer's just hopping on and going. And
yeah.
So it really is the same thing. I just think it's harder sometimes for people to kind of wrap their brains around because it really does that time on your phone, on social media, doing the billing, those could be billable hours, or they could just be resting, which they should be, you know?
And I just think that, I mean, this could dive deep into a rabbit hole, but I think a lot of horse people have a certain level of comfort with being broke. Yeah. And stretched thin, not just financially, but also just their time.
Right.
And
like there's some badge of honor with that, which there isn't.
Yes. And I mean, like I said, I could go down a deep rabbit hole about this.
Yeah.
But I think knowing your value mm-hmm. and then charging accordingly, the key to being successful at this, because if you're stretched so thin, that again, then your focus isn't on the horses. It's going to be a struggle, right?
Yeah. It's going to take its toll. It's got to take its toll somewhere. Yeah. So, yeah. That makes total sense. So when you're talking about, you mentioned sponsors. So part of what you do, which again, as a, you know, as a professional rider, trainer, and just, they aren't always the best marketers because it does take a certain brain like ours to excel in marketing. I would say I'm a professional amateur, you know, I'm very serious about being an amateur, but that's not where my expertise lies. I hire professionals to help me with that.
Yes.
So sponsorships is a big one because sponsorships, it takes a lot of time to cultivate sponsorships, create those relationships, manage those sponsorships way different than it used to be. You know, when people would yes. just say, hey, you know, put up my banner and we'll call it a day.
The good old days.
Yeah. Yeah. Very different now. So tell, just kind of share with us a little bit about that. Like, how do you help your riders with their sponsorship marketing?
Yeah. So the first part is getting them to believe that they deserve the sponsorship.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
You know, because everyone, you don't have to be an Olympic gold medalist to be deserving of a sponsorship. And Izzy, who's our chief marketing officer, and she's our creative director. She actually just wrote an article that's going to be published soon about why your sponsor doesn't care about your dressage score. Just getting people thinking about the fact that, okay, yeah, getting the medals, that is great. But really your sponsors are looking for how you're going to help them sell products, right? I have forever and always viewed sponsorship relationships as advertising relationships. The sponsors are paying you mostly via product, and they are 1000% expecting something in return. And if you are, and we see them now, especially with Instagram and TikTok and all that, that there's a lot of very influencers, you know, influential people that might not necessarily be competing at the top of their sport. That doesn't mean that they're any less attractive to sponsors. And so, again, the hard part with being a professional rider is it's like, oh God, now I have to worry about this too. And so again, that's where we come in. And I always have our riders, when we first start working with them, make two wish lists. I always ask them for two wish lists. One is a list of brands and products that they are currently using that they're obsessed with. You know, that it would make complete sense for that company to say yes, because we know that you're a believer in the product. Because that's the other thing, right? And India, you know this from being on your side of the sponsorship stuff. Mm-hmm. Companies don't want to be handing product out to people who don't truly believe in it. And so that's the first wish list is, all right, well, I've been feeding Triple Crown for 20 years. All right, awesome. Let's start there. I've been riding in Voltaire for a decade. Okay, let's start there. And then the second wish list is a list of companies and brands that they are really interested in and may not have bought the product yet for whatever reason. But those are the two lists that we start with. And we go from there.
Yeah, I was just thinking about when you were saying that, you know, I mean, how passionate I am about sponsorship marketing. I sold sponsorships for the Atlanta Steeplechase for 8 years. And I was on the other side of it when I was in my corporate job. I was the sponsor and I believe in it just 5,000,000%. It was the influencers before they were influencers. And I think when you were saying that, I was like, that's really how writers should think about themselves, is that they, it's not this disconnect between writer and sponsor. It's you are representing that company as an influencer and kind of just helping them see that that there's a real marriage there. And like you said, because I did sponsorship consulting for a while for Triple Crown, and it wasn't about the posts of the blue ribbons and the, not that those aren't great, but that's kind of expected at that point.
Yes.
At the upper level writer. So, hey, you know, to have some of those posts for sure. But it was really, like you said, like, why do you love this? What changes have you seen in your horses? What do you like about it? What do you like about the company? You know, how, what, I mean, that's one of the biggest things about Triple Crown. Like, the people behind that brand are amazing, you know, and having the riders talk about that. But also what I was just thinking about, because this is something I was super passionate about when selling sponsorships, when I was with the Steeplechase, it's obviously an equestrian event, but our spectators were not equestrian. And also when I was talking to companies, I was like, equestrians are also consumers. We wash our hair, we drive cars, we drink Gatorade or Powerade, you know, we're buying shoes, we're buying, you know, and I sold a huge race sponsorship, $100,000 race sponsorship to a cruise line. Talk
That's
about
amazing.
A complete disconnect from equestrian, and they loved it. They did a raffle. It was so much fun. And I'm starting to see that more. I've seen Yeti.
Yes.
Right. They're starting to sponsor some riders. I would love to see more of that. One of the big ones that I saw when I was in Wellington, the amateur owner warm-up ring. Okay, so the amateur owner is probably in their mid-50s, probably have a ton of money. And Restylane, which is a filler, they sponsored the warm-up ring. There were Restylane banners everywhere. And it's one of the most brilliant sponsorships, because I was thinking, like, as equestrians, we're kind of like NASCAR. We're very loyal to the brands that support us. And I was like, whoever was in the marketing side that decided to do that was so brilliant. They reached their target audience. They got a ton of visibility. And obviously I get super excited about this. I could have a whole episode or a couple on sponsorship.
That's one of the things, again, that we've always focused on with the sponsorships is, you know, I always look at it as the close circle and then your big audience. Okay. So your close circle is the people that are physically in your barn, the ones that you're teaching, the ones that you're coaching at horse shows. Even you could, the outer edge of that circle would be like people that see you at horse shows. And then your big circle audience is your social media reach, the clicks on your website, all of that. You have to figure out how you're going to reach both of those audiences. Because again, if I'm putting myself in the brand's side of things, I want to know, what are you doing to physically put these items in the hands of consumers? Mm-hmm. And so you have to get creative, right? Because again, not everyone, there's only one gold medal given out every 4 years. Right. So one thing that we do is we made little folding tables with a tablecloth that had the rider's logo on it and said thank you to our sponsors. And then we invited the sponsors to send us sample sizes or coupons or bags of treats, you know, whatever. And then we put those out clinics that the riders are teaching or at when they're stabling at a horse show or, you know, a big event. So that, again, those are the things where it's like that physical touch of, all right, here's this liniment that I'm obsessed with. I want to give you a sample size of it. You go try it. And then one thing that I like to push the companies to do is to let us put like a sticker or something on the liniment, or I'm using that as an example, with like a coupon code, because then, because it's not enough to just give away free stuff. You want that become a purchase. And so let's do these little step of getting new customers. And so, you know, you just think outside the box, right? Yeah. When you're thinking about the sponsorships as well. And that's something that, because there is so much more competition now for the sponsorships itself, because of social media, that again, you have to figure out what you're going to do to set yourself apart.
Well, I think on the flip side of that, the person that's making that sponsorship decision, they're accountable to that budget, where, you know, like you said, back in the day, it was just like you had kind of, you know, it wasn't so technical on the ROI. You know, you had the banners up, you had this, but now they really want to know that, and what did that investment bring, you know? And that's okay. If you can quantify the exposure, great. You know, cause you can do that through social media. I mean, I love, you know, social media analytics, because that can immediately show you the reach, but there's a lot more to it these days. And, you know, like a writer is going to have a tough time speaking to someone at the corporate, not that they don't understand the product, but that's not their forte, to be able to talk about analytics and reach and ROI and all of those things. And so it's great to have someone that does have that experience to speak on their behalf and go sell those sponsorships, and everybody's happy, because the companies really do value their sponsored writers, and they need them. They need them because it's hard for them to touch the consumer directly. So when they have someone who has that influence, you know, I've seen just incredible partnerships with sponsored writers, and, you know, it works to everybody's advantage. It, you know, when it works well. So I love that. You know, like I said, I could talk about that forever. So I'm going to switch gears really quick. I didn't say this in the beginning, but you are also an author. You wrote a book. And what I love about your book is that it is a pull it out every day, use it type of book, Grid Pro Quo, which is like the most clever name ever. Tell us about your book.
So I started writing a column for the USEA, the US Eventing Association, pretty early on in my career with Mythic Landing, because I was looking for different ways to get my clients' names out there. So essentially what I did at first is I offered to write this article, this column for the USEA, and the deal was I got to interview whoever I wanted. So
that's pretty cool.
You know, so it was a win-win, right? Like, they got free content for the magazine, and I got free publicity for my clients. And, you know, I did run out of clients at a certain point, but then it was also great because it was a way to get me introductions to new people that I might not have, you know, known before. And while I did that for 7 years, and there was like people every once in a while would be like, Margaret, you should make it into a book. And I was always like, I don't know anything about writing a book, so let's not. And and then finally,
say you're also a little busy running a business, competing, and traveling. On top of that.
And then I have to say, you know, I don't want to say I got bored with it, but I kind of just got to this stage with the column where it wasn't really like what I was looking forward to doing every month. You know, I needed a new challenge. I have, my friend calls it summit fever, where you see a summit and you want to get to the top of it. But the problem with her and I is that we get to the top of a summit and then we just look for the next one.
What's next?
Essentially I got to the top of the summit with this column and then was like, all right, well, what's next? Maybe I should write a book. And then I, no joke, sat on that for a year. And then my friend, I mean, I have the best friends. My friend was like, you need to do this. And I was like, I have to put together a proposal and, you know, all this stuff. And she's like, oh my God, I will help you. So she helped me with the proposal to Trafalgar Square, which, you know, everyone probably knows is one of the, I would say, biggest equestrian publishing houses. And they said, yeah, we love it. And then it was like, oh, now I have to do this. And so then essentially what I did, you know, the magazine obviously was all eventing, and I wanted to make sure that this book was going to be cross-disciplinary. So I basically spent a year, I think, calling, emailing, texting every hunter jumper person that I knew, or that a friend knew, or a friend of a friend knew, so that I could make the book a little bit more well-rounded.
Well, and tell us like what the content of the book, because we didn't go into
that. Yeah. So basically I interviewed 52 professionals about their favorite jumping exercise. So the cool part about is the book has 52 jumping diagrams and then a how-to. And so every chapter is, every rider has their own chapter, and you go through how to set up the exercise. It tells you what you need, whether you need 6 sets of standards or 12 sets of standards. And then it gives you the why and the how. So like why this rider really likes this exercise, and then your step-by-step how to work your way through it. And we made sure for the most part that every exercise has options to make it easier and options to make it harder. I kind of said when I would be interviewing people, I would say, all right, let's say the audience is your 3-foot rider. And from there, let's make some stuff that's a little easier, and then let's make some stuff that's a little harder. And yeah, so there's like 52 exercises. I got to, you know, interview. I had a full fangirl moment getting to interview Ann Krasinski.
I cannot believe you just said that, because when you were just saying that, I was going to tell you, I worked for Sidelines Magazine 19 years ago. And I don't even think I made any money. I don't even know if they paid me. I didn't care. I had access to all the writers, and I interviewed Ann Krasinski. And I was going to just tell you that. I can't believe you said that exact name.
Yes.
Because it was such a highlight, scared me to death. I mean, I probably was like 22. I don't even know. But I was like, I'm doing it. That's so funny.
Yeah. I mean, and that, no knock against Philip Dutton, but, you know, I grew up eventing. Philip Dutton's like, well, I see him at events every weekend because, you know, I'm in area 2, which is where he is. Same thing with Boyd. So getting to talk to some of the upper level jumper riders and hunter riders was so cool. Like Sandy.
Is Kent Farrington in there? I can't remember.
No, but Sandy Farrell.
Oh, yeah.
Sandy Farrell, who's like such just a classic hunter. You know, watching her ride every round, you know, it's just so smooth. And so, so I got to talk to a lot of cool people and put it all into a book. And
well, you know what's so cool about your book? I've personally given it to several trainers as a gift. It makes a great gift. It's a great gift. And I've seen at one of the barns, I've seen that book with post-it notes and mark. I know, it's like, it's so cool that they're at, you know, they actually use it. But what I have found, because I'm a former eventer and now I dressage rider, all you have to do is put everything in poles. Like you can still do the exercises. You just put the poles on the ground. And I also love, you can't hear their voice, but you do get the tone of their message and in their chapter. And what I loved about it, it's like why they think that's beneficial for the horse and the rider. Some of them chose different things, but the benefit would be, and why, you know, this is a suppling exercise, so you want to do this and that. And I think it's the coolest idea, and especially that it is a book that is actually, you don't sit at home and read it. You actually use it. And it's really cool. I love that your friend pushed you to do that.
Yes.
That's really cool. And I remember I pushed you too.
I know. I know. But, you know, it was kind of funny, like you were saying, like Sam Griffiths, he's an Australian that's based in England. You know, his article was like, well, you do this, this, and then a 4-foot oxer. And I was like, all right, buddy.
Oh, yeah, there's your book right there. Show it. Yeah. Oh, well, no one can see it, but I can see it.
But you know, and I was like, so we're going to need to back that down a little bit.
Then you just do a 4-foot oxer. Sounds like, yeah, of course, yeah. An Irish rider would say that too. Yeah, then you just pop over.
I did sneak in 3 like horsemanship exercises in here. Stuff that you can do on the ground with your horse. You know, yeah. Michael Alway is local to me and he's an amazing trainer, natural horseman, and then Tick Maynard is another one.
Well, maybe that's your next book.
Yeah.
You know?
Yo, so, yeah. I'm not sure my marriage would survive another book. So I even had one of my clients was like, are you done with that book? And I was like, yeah, why? And they're like, you were just getting a little grouchy towards the end. And I was like, I have never worked so hard in my life getting it all done. But
yeah, that's so cool. I love it. So you kind of have shared this with us, and it's what I ask everybody, because I love to speak to entrepreneurs and kind of find out the why and the how. And because I really believe, and I've heard this as well, I've heard this because I listen to so many marketing podcasts and entrepreneurial books and things. And I remember hearing like, everybody has a fabulous idea. Everybody has a great idea about a business, a service, a product, but only 10% of those people, of us population, actually acts on it. So it does take something. So what was it for you with starting MLE? And then what was it for you? I mean, I think part of it, you already went over that with the book, you know, you had some of the content and then just being pushed. But what was it for MLE when you're like, all right, I'm doing this?
Yeah. So I was really young actually when I started, which I think is important to my story, just because I feel like when you're younger, you're sometimes a little bit more fearless. And so you don't require as much sleep when you're younger, or at least I didn't. And so, you know, I went to school, I went to University of Maryland, got 2 bachelor's degrees in marketing and public relations and American studies, which is actually very useful because it's just the study of people and how they interact and stuff like that. But I was obsessed with horses. And so I was really lucky that right out of college, I just happened to get a job with Practical Horsemen. So I got to stay a little bit. And then the barn that I grew up riding at asked me to help them with their sponsorship program. And I don't want to say I found it easy, but in a way, I found it like very easy to do. Yeah. And so then that got this idea of like, well, if they need this, and do other people? And so I did do it as a side hustle. This is where the lack of sleep comes in. You know, I did it as a side hustle for about a year to kind of be like, is this really a thing? Can I support myself? Can I pay the bills doing this? Because remember, at that point, I was also, again, obsessed with horses. And I was really struggling with my decision to not do horses full time. Because that was, you know, always the childhood dream, right? Ride horses for a living. And I realized that wasn't what I wanted to do because of what we were talking about earlier with that comfort of being stretched thin.
Right.
And I am not comfortable doing that. I just never have been. And so I was like, can I support myself doing this? And I made my dad sit down with me to go over my budget, not for the business, but for my life. You know, I was like, okay, you know, this is how much I'm bringing in. Can I, you know, do this? Which again, involved a horse, right? So it wasn't just me, it was me and a horse.
No, I would say probably 99% of the people listening right now are nodding going, yeah, we got to figure out what I need to make to pay for my horses. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it wasn't just figuring out how to pay for myself to eat, but how my horse to eat and to compete and to do all those things that I wanted to do. And so I mean, it took me a solid year of doing it as a side hustle before I finally got brave enough to quit my lovely job at Practical Horseman and jump in and do this full time. And so I was 24 when I did that. And like I said, I think you can't start your business when you're older. You'll probably make a lot less mistakes than I made when I was 24. But you do have to have a certain level of tenacity and just making it work, right? You just have to make it work and you can't give up. One of the things that I tell people is you have to be committed to being successful without being too committed to how you find that success.
Oh, yes, that's so great. It's so true.
Right? You know, yeah. Because at some point you're going to have to pivot. When I started my business, it was Mythic Landing Event because I thought that all I was going to be doing was working for horse shows, organizing horse shows, getting the sponsorships for horse shows. So it was Mythic Landing Event. And then eventually we realized that, or I realized that there was actually more of a market for me with the professional riders and the businesses. So then we just did Mythic Landing Enterprises and I changed the name. But if I was so focused on just the horse shows, I would have missed all these other opportunities that appeared to help make the business what it is.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times you have to say yes and then figure it out. Because so many people get ready, and they want to make it perfect before they launch. And, you know, I've been doing Main Street Market for 5 years and every week we are tweaking something to make it better every week.
And just be honest. I know you, I just tell my clients, hey, I've never done this before, but here's my plan. All right, we have never done this before. And that still happens today. Sometimes a client will be like, hey, can you do this? And we're like, I mean, we can. So you're just honest with them and say, hey, I've never done this before, but here's my plan for how I'm going to get it done. And a lot of times, if it's already an established relationship that you have with somebody, they would rather pay you to figure it out than to pay a stranger that they don't know and don't have a relationship with.
That's really true. And I think what you said too is just, you do have to have that tenacity. And everyone that I talk to on Main Street Minute is an equestrian. So I do think that we as horse people do have that, let me at it, let me try.
Oh, we're built different.
We're built that way anyway. So I haven't had anyone say, I tiptoed. Everyone's like, yeah, I just did it and figured it out. And like you said, I mean, you have to be willing to pivot, we've definitely pivoted many times and you have to be willing to say oh, that didn't work. And I've got two of the most fabulous interns and I know you have a wonderful team, but I always tell them, I was like, there, and I learned this over and over and over again with writing, there's no failure. It's just a learning opportunity. You're like, oh, that didn't go the way I thought it would. I'm going to do it different next time. So I think that's something that we all kind of have in our bones from writing too.
Yeah. Do you ever have, and I think you do, because I call you with the random business ideas, where we just I have this idea list of business ideas that I don't have time for. But it's just once you get started.
I know. It's so true. And I do it all the time. I'm like, I'll think, we're in Vero Beach, Florida, and I'm not kidding you, there's not a yogurt store here in the entire town. There's no yogurt store. You cannot get soft serve yogurt here.
Yeah.
So I want to open a yogurt store. Yeah. My husband is like, no, you're not opening a yogurt store. He was like, you have three businesses, And I was like, but we need one,
Yeah.
It's true. It's just you're always thinking of business ideas and what could work. And
funny. And that attitude of Well, I'll just do it.
I'll just do it. I know. If no one's going to do it, I'll just figure it out. Yeah. Well, that is how Main Street Market was created for sure, because there are other businesses like ours, but that are out there. Well, I can say similar idea, but they don't do it like we do it. And that's why I was like, finally, I was like, okay, I'm just going to build it. I'll just build it.
Yeah. Bloody and there's plenty of other media companies and business companies, but I can confidently say, like you're saying, nobody does it like we do it.
No, they don't.
And I'm not saying that we're better. I mean, I think we're better, but you know, I'm not saying that we're necessarily better than everybody else. It's just, we do things the way that we do them.
Right.
And at this point, the company's 18 years old, right?
Yeah.
So we have a track record.
Right. Well, I think you're comfortable and so am I. I mean, like you said, we can jump down this rabbit hole, but the right clients will come to you. You will find the ones that like your style. And you and I have absolutely told people, hey, I don't think we can help you. I don't think that I have, our network is so strong in the sport horse market and the crossover into Western disciplines that horses can cross over. So a reiner, a true reiner, is probably not going to sell a Main Street Market. And I'm not going to tell that owner, oh, sure. I mean, I can get I can get it out there and I can get more eyes on it. And eventually I hope that we're going to have a stronger presence in the Western world. But I feel confident. I feel comfortable telling someone that. I'd rather say that than, you know, disappoint them. And I think you're the same way. So yes, I do think you are better than a lot of companies who have attempted this, because you've been in it for 18 years. I've been in the equestrian marketing realm for like 25. I've seen companies come and go that have attempted to do similar things, but it takes true discipline. It's not just passion for what we do. You got to keep showing up, and a lot of people won't. They won't keep going to achieve that success. It gets hard, just like it does in riding. And, you know, like most days are really, really good, but there are days, tech glitches or, you know, someone's internet didn't work and I get blamed or, you know, stuff like that. Those are the hard days that you're like, really? But then you just show up again. And, you know, I think that our clients really appreciate that, you know, about us. I know yours too.
Yeah. And just like have a team around you that not necessarily, I think one of the hard things about being a business owner is that you're at the top, right? You don't, and a lot of riders and professionals, I would say they're small businesses, you know? Yeah. So it's not like they have this team of people, but you have to also be comfortable talking about your struggles and maybe your problems with someone else. Because if you try to solve everything on your own, again, you're just one, you're going to torture yourself, but you also might be limiting yourself in what the solutions could be. And if you have, you know, someone like you and I can call each other.
Yes, I love that. And we do, like 80 minute. Yeah. And it is.
Yeah. And, you know, having someone like that, and Michelle Dunn is another person who I can call anytime. And, you know, I try to be that person for other people to just talk it out, you know, of being like, okay, this is like, I've come up against this lock, you know, with a certain client or with a certain service, and I don't know what to do. And being comfortable saying, I don't know what to do. But knowing that you have a good, you know, support system around you is, I think people would be very surprised at how many people are willing to help.
Yes, for sure.
If they just
put be it a out little there. Vulnerable, right?
Yeah.
Well, I love this. I could talk to you forever. But thank you for your time today. If somebody wanted to get in touch with you about Mythic Landing, like say there's a rider out there that.
Yeah.
So it's a free consultation, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Always. The first call is usually you telling me about your business, me listening, and then coming up with some ideas of, all right, well, this is how we could come in and help you do this or help you do that. So yeah, first calls are always free. We do also then have some consulting services. So if you're like, I just tell me what to do, but I want to do it. We can do that. But just find us mythiclanding.com, and all of our social handles are usually at Mythic Landing. You can find me anywhere, Margaret at Mythic Landing. But we're here. We always say, like, we're here to help. We're here to help when you're ready. or when you need us.
Yeah, perfect. And then what about Grid Pro Quo? Where can people find that?
So that is now on the website, is called The Stable Group. They've purchased Trafalgar Square. So I believe it's thestablegroup.com, but you can just Google Grid Pro Quo. And if you want a signed copy to give as a gift or something like that, just get in touch with me and I'll pop one in the mail to you.
I love it. All right. Well, thank you for being with us. And
thank you
everyone for listening to the Main Street Minute. And we will be back in a couple weeks. Take care.
If you enjoyed today's episode, please let us know. Email support@mainstreetmarket.com. Please share and join us again next week for another episode of the Main Street Minute, right here on the Equus Radio Network.